Hello, everybody. Just a very quick one about Instagram. If you're on it, Meta, the parent company, is reducing the number of political posts visible to users on their feed. This is a real thing, not a hoax. So go to your Instagram profile, tap the three horizontal lines in the top right corner to open the settings tab, scroll down to what you see, click on content preferences, open political content, and turn on don't limit political content. That's an option. Otherwise, you won't see almost anything we post because we are deemed political. Please do that now, or you won't even see the posts about our shows, our fun things. So if you want to see Guilty Feminist content and know when we're coming to a place near you or releasing a new podcast, do it now.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
I'm a feminist, but I wore a long red jacket. I'm a bit hot in today because I'm co-hosting with Jade Adams, and I knew she'd come in something completely fabulous. So while I know it's not good to be sartorially competitive with other women, I thought I also don't want to be in the shadow, which obviously I wouldn't be anyway, and Jade would never do that. And so I don't know really why I was thinking about it at all, but look, fuck it, just get the glitter on. I've also done eyelashes.
I'm a feminist, but I get annoyed that men don't give up their seats on public transport because last Christmas, I gave you my heart and the very next... No, that's not what I want to say. Last Christmas, I was wearing a pair of Elton John's platforms, not his own, but like his.
Like his.
And a drag queen did a scissor kick in the middle of a stage that was built by Selfridges, created a hole. I didn't see it, and I went over and I've damaged a ligament in my knee.
Ooh.
So now when I get on the train or a tube, I'm raging. I'm raging at the men for not standing up, not looking at me immediately and thinking that woman needs to sit down.
Could you wear a badge that says,
"Baby,
I have an Elton"?
I'd get away with it.
Or you could say, "I have an Elton John related injury. Please help me." I would love you to wear that T-shirt.
I do look a bit like Elton John. Went into a fancy dress shop and came out as David Bowie.
Hey! I'm a feminist, but my favourite opera is La Bohème, in which my favourite woman dies a very tragic death. But to be honest, it wouldn't be as good if she didn't die, because it's nice to have a good cry. I'll watch a woman die for entertainment sometimes, just to get things out.
How does she die?
Oh, of consumption. Yeah.
Oh, they always die of that.
Yeah.
Satine in Moulin Rouge dies of consumption.
Yeah, they're constantly dying of consumption.
I'm a feminist, but I want to be an inspiring role model for other working class women in the arts. But I don't know how I'm going to feel when I inspire another fat Bristolian female comedian who can sing opera. I don't know if I'm going to want to support her or push her down the stairs.
It's all about Eve / Jade. I get that. I'm a feminist, but I'm quite excited that tonight, at the last night of the proms, where we are... I mean, obviously, this is a bit before the last night of the proms. This is the last afternoon of the proms.
This is the last night of the proms eve. Here we are at the last night of the proms. And I get to go to the last night of the proms because I'm doing this. And I'm very excited to see, and I know this might not sound feminist, a woman singing Rule Britannia. Stay with me. I know Rule Britannia is about patriotism, and patriotism often has its own conflicts and chats with feminism about what's right and what's wrong. But the reason I'm excited is because the woman who's singing it is, in fact, an American who is coming out wrapped in the bisexual flag, which has really pissed off Conservative Woman website, I notice. Yeah, they're not pleased she's on our show either. Her name is Jamie Barton. And they said, I suppose Jade Adams on the podcast won't bother to make the joke that Jamie's an ideal name for a bisexual. How is that a joke?
I wouldn't make that joke because that's not a joke.
It's not a joke.
That's just words that they've said. Yeah.
And then she says, because there's probably no jokes allowed on The Guilty Feminist.
No, none.
That's caused a... I'm going to send that bit of tape to the Conservative woman. Just that noise. That was the outrage when we were told no joke. It's not a joke to say Jamie is an ideal name for a bisexual person. I think she might think a bisexual person is a non-binary person. I don't know what she thinks, but Conservative Woman magazine are very displeased with us. They're very displeased with us being here, and they're very displeased with any bisexuality being introduced to the proms. She said it's meant to be about Brexit. Now, she didn't really, but that's what she meant. That was very much the subtext. This is Brexit's only concert. Why do we have to have bisexual people in it? That's not Brexit, is it? Brexit is getting away from bisexual people and sending them all back to bisexualania, where they came from. Admittedly, Jamie did come from America. She's not wrong about that. She's not wrong.
I'm sure that woman went to college or university or something.
Yeah, she will have.
Yeah, and oh, we all know what happens to women at university and college. We become bisexual.
Well, I mean, otherwise, we're wasting our time in the second year when there are less exams that are important or fewer exams that are important.
You had to be bisexual when you were doing the course I was doing, drama, theatre and media. Let's be honest, there's not a lot of straight guys in that. You wouldn't get laid otherwise.
Yeah, but that's not how bisexuality works. I hope. I don't know. Do you want to do one last one?
Do you want one more?
Yeah, go on.
Now, when I wrote this, I was in the car thinking of the Guilty Feminist normal shows, which is, as we've said, in the dark and not in a school hall. And I'm just going to be honest with you. This is dicey. This is spicy. Let's call it spicy. Now, I'm going to say it, but I'm just going to preface that I'm sorry if this is too much for 2:30 in the afternoon.
Yeah. So basically, she's prefacing it by saying, sorry if it kills the gig. You sure you want to do it?
Oh, yes, because I haven't got a backup. I'm a feminist, but sometimes I like my partner to tie me up and dominate me in bed whilst he spanks me to Dizzy Rascal's Baseline Junkie. Big, dirty, stinking bass. I remember laying there all tied up once and seeing myself in the mirror and asking myself, is this feminism?
Live from Bike Hall in London for the BBC Proms, the Spotted Age Shop presents The Guilty Feminist with me, Deborah Francis White, guest co-host Jade Adams, special guests Jamie Barton and Erilyn Wallen talking about women in music.
You sit there and I'll sit here.
Hello everyone.
Hi. There we go.
Wonderful.
They were expecting someone much smaller.
Generally it feels like a bit of a school hall, doesn't it? It feels a bit like assembly.
Wow, they're so lit up, aren't they?
That's what I said. I said we shouldn't be able to see them that clearly and they should feel a little bit more anonymous. But look, we'll close our eyes.
That's exact. Sound a little bit more drunk than you normally. Yeah, that's it's getting there. Then it feels like a real gig. And, I need the smell of piss. Is there any way that you can make that happen?
Is that because you're used to performing in comedy clubs?
Yes.
Jade did the Royal Albert Hall with us. When I moved to London, one of the things I was, I went to a meeting and someone said to me, what's your dream? Where would you like to end up? And I said, I would like to end up in a crystal, Swarovski crystal gown on the Royal Albert Hall singing an aria. I got to the Royal Albert Hall, but actually the first time was I was wearing pleather leggings singing Cell Block Tango.
Cell Block Tango.
From Chicago. It's close. It's near.
It's a step in the right, a large pleather step in the right direction. We opened the show with a piece from a show called A Musical, which is done by Jade Adams and her co-star, Kiri Pritchard McLean, and a man called Dave Cribb, where comedians get to perform their favourite song from a musical as if they're a musical star. It's more our dream than yours, to be honest with you.
It's basically giving people who are out... Like, for example, I talk about this a lot on the podcast, and if you played a drinking game with the amount of times I mentioned Phantom on the podcast, you'd get absolutely leathered. But I love Phantom of the Opera, and I would love to be Christine, but... That's never going to happen. So I created with two other people a show where people like me can perform whatever role they wanted. So actually, Deborah, when she came onto the show for the first time, your dream role was in Cabaret. Mm. And you played a great Sally Bowles, but actually you didn't do Sally. You decided that your dream role would be...
To do Mein Herr impersonating Theresa May. It was when she was still in power and she was singing Bye Bye to Europe. But all sort of slightly like, Bye Bye Mein Lieber Herr. Yeah, that kind of vibe. If you listen to the podcast regularly, which clearly none of you do, it's already been on there. So we decided to do Cell Block Tango. He had it coming as a sort of guilty feminist opening to the Royal Albert Hall show, which soon will be available for your listening pleasure. So that was an unqualified delight. So I thought Jade would make an incredible host for this because she does all sorts of phenomenal singing. Now, Jade, can you tell me, yes, have you had a guilty week or a feminist week?
I would like to say I'm the perfect feminist, but I'd love to say that. But my boyfriend has told me that I am not the perfect feminist whatsoever.
Well, the fact that you've listened to a man, immediately alarm bells. You don't ask a man if you're a feminist. He doesn't know.
Yes, but I'm asking him this whilst he washes my clothes.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
All right. Okay. That's
isn't it, babe?
Someone.
Yeah.
Yeah. You've got a lovely relationship. A lovely relationship. And what were his reasons for saying you weren't a perfect feminist?
Because I basically will sometimes... babe, what do I do that's not feminist? That's not true. I am in charge and I am the breadwinner of the house. Okay, I'll just say that I've had a feminist week because I've been in charge this week. But
excellent.
Yeah, that's
yay!
What I'll say.
The guilty part of that was it took you 5 minutes to say you'd been a feminist this week. I don't know if that's guilty or just British, but if it's British, hurrah, last night at the proms, it goes with the theme. It goes with the theme. This is The Guilty Feminist, the podcast in which we explore our noble goals as 21st century feminists and our hypocrisies and insecurities which undermine them. I'm Deborah Frances White, with me is Jade Adams, and we're talking about women in classical music!
Can I say something?
Yeah.
There is the sound of a lorry reversing outside. Will that affect anything?
Nah, I think we just push through because it's a podcast and it's free. So, I mean, it's not free for you, but you're getting to look at us and possibly touch us later. And the people listening at home, they get an hour's free podcast every single week, week in, week out. They pay nothing for it. There's no license fee. If they can't hear a lorry briefly reversing, then fuck them. So... Hashtag feminism. Would you like to hear some stand-up comedy? Then please welcome to the stage the incredible Jade Adams!
Hello!
Hello!
Again... Not normally how I do stand-up comedy with Deborah Frances White stood behind me, but if this goes well, she might have to come to all of my gigs and sit behind me. Hello, dirty feminist. Oh, my God. Joke number one.
That's my secret show, Jade. Don't tell them about that.
I want to just find out, is there anyone under 18 in? Anyone under 20? Who's the youngest in here? Shout an age out when you think, 18, who's 18? Hello? I love that you're here learning. Because that's all I want to be, is an inspiring role model. Because I look out there and I see the Kardashians. And I know what you're thinking. You and Kim Kardashian are very similar, Jade. We are. We have the same circumference of ass. But she made hers by injecting stuff into her bottom, whereas I've done it by injecting stuff into my mouth. And you can see who's a happier, more rounded person. Me. And I feel like I could be, instead of, you know, the self-made billionaire that is Kylie Jenner. If you don't know do you know who Kylie Jenner is? She's 22 years old and she has more money than any of us put together will ever have by convincing young girls that she has taken herself from looking like a nice normal girl into a 45-year-old woman by selling lip pencils. And I feel like I could be more inspiring than that, because I feel like the 18-year-old, raise your hand again, because I'm looking at the wrong person, great. I feel like there's things that aren't told to you when you're your age. Like, isn't it irrelevant that I know how to grow cress out of cotton wool? But I didn't know how to pay my tax bill until about 3 years ago. And I found out in a very difficult way. And what it is, if you don't know what that word is yet, tax. There might be some other people in here because they're not spending it, not paying it at the moment, spending it. That's not us, that's the other guy. You know, don't know what that word is yet, and you know, you're sort of, you can look at your phone and go, oh, there's an opinion, I'll have that. But what will happen later on in your life is you'll, what's your name? Abby. What will happen is you're probably creative, and you'll earn some money one day, and you'll move a tax bracket slightly, and you'll start waking up in the morning and thinking things like, do we really need ambulances? Now, I want to be here to tell you to ignore those voices, okay? Some other things you need to know, Abby. About growing up, you're going to grow a beard. I'm just putting it out there. No one told me about the beard. Okay? I'm all right about it, but I needed a run-up, you know? I needed to know when I was growing up that this beard was coming, because it came in my 30s and I was just... And do you know what? Do you know what I found out about it? I found out about it because I was on a date with my boyfriend, the one at the back, and we were on his second date. He doesn't like me telling this story, and you'll see why. We're on a second date. We're in his Ford Focus. I keep it real. I'm not with him for his money. And it's a glorious day. We're having a lovely time. I've just fallen in love. I'm overweight. So they all pretended they didn't fancy me whilst fingering me under the table. Other chubby people in here might be aware of what happens to you at school with the boys. They all fancy you, but they can't admit it to their friends. Anyway, would have been different when we were all Rubenesque and it was beautiful, but we don't live in that. It's Kate Moss ruined it for us. But we were on a second date, and it was my first boyfriend. We're all excited, we're all in love, and he's driving the car, and I'm backlit because the sun's coming in from the window, and I look great backlit, look. I just look fabulous. For the people that are listening, I just turned around. And he keeps looking at me whilst he's driving with the eyes of love, and I keep going, oh, look at the road, we're going to crash. And then after a while, I realise that this look of love that he's giving me is the look of concern. And so whilst he's driving, as you can tell, I look like I'm wanking off a cow upside down. He's driving, and I said to him, I was like, what's wrong? And he said, you've got a hair. Now, I wanted to be the strong, confident woman he met. I wanted to style it out. You know, that could have been very embarrassing on my second date. So I decided to lean into him, and I went, go on, babe, get it. And he said, which one? Now, see why he doesn't like that story. I feel like, had I have met a woman called Pam, who was 69, I used to be work in a coffee shop, I'm just like you, and I worked there for a long time, and I loved Pam, because when you've got an accent like mine, people don't often speak to you about feminism. It wasn't something that we ever were brought up learning about. When you're working class, women are just in charge. There's no conversation about it.
And so, like, I didn't really understand what feminism was, and it isn't, it hasn't been until wonderful podcasts like this have come out, and women are talking about it more. And there was this woman, and she used to come into the coffee shop and talk to me about feminism and politics, and I found her super inspirational. But the main reason I found her inspirational is because she did all of this with a full beard, and she didn't give a shit. And I wanted to be just like Pam, so I just feel like, Abby, I should just tell you that now. The beard's coming, and you're going to constantly look suspicious while she try and find beard hair. What else do I need to tell you? I think that might be it, Abby. Do you feel like you're prepared for life? Yeah, now? Who are your role models? Your mum. Oh, isn't that lovely? What does your mum do for you that makes you inspired? She sat next to you? Oh, I'm so sorry that I've said some of the words I've said to your... to your youngest. It's not me teaching them to her. At least she's seen me. Look how empowering this is. Stood on stage. I used to work in Asda. It's great, isn't it? What is it your mum does for you that's inspiring, Abby? She's a physicist. Well, I am speechless. Mum, are you a physicist? Blimey, now. What I was about to do next was I was going to talk about my mum, who used to sew sequins on my freestyle disco dancing costumes and work at Asda, and how inspiring that was. But she gave herself carpal tunnel syndrome. But Abby's come in with, my mum's a physicist. Do you know what, Abby? I think you've probably won this, and I need to just shut up. Great. Thanks, Abby.
Hello, Guilty Feminist. It's Deborah. I wanted to let you know about a very exciting event in Westminster in London from Intelligence Squared. They're doing an event on Words That Change the World, The Power of Women's Voices, on the 28th of November. And I will be speaking alongside Yvette Cooper, Bonnie Greer and Daisy Goodwin, as well as an amazing cast of actors bringing the speeches to life. Buy tickets today on the Intelligence Squared website. It's going to be a banger. If you're in America or Canada, you might think, but Deborah, why don't you ever come here? Gang, I've got to tell you, it's sorted, which is British for happening. In January 2020, I'm going to be coming with the Guilty Feminist to Boston, New York, Philadelphia, Chicago, Toronto, Vancouver, San Francisco, Seattle, and Los Angeles. The dates for these shows will all be on the Guilty Feminist website, guiltyfeminist.com. Now, the tickets are not on sale yet. Hold your trigger fingers, except for the first New York date, which is almost sold out. Now, you can buy these tickets on pre-sale Wednesday, the 16th of October, but only if you have the special code GUILTY. That's right, GUILTY. The tickets go on sale to the public on Friday, the 18th of October. So you want to put the 16th of October into your diary and check the Guilty Feminist website to see when we are coming to you, so you can put that date in your diary as well and not book anything else out. Don't say we don't do anything nice for you. Now, if you're not in America, but you still love the Guilty Feminist, we will be in Manchester on the 15th of November. We will be in Dublin on the 6th of November. And we will be coming back to Manchester for the Secret Policeman's Tour. That's our show with Amnesty International, which will be a comedy and music extravaganza on the 3rd of December. You can find all of those dates on guiltyfeminist.com. Book now. If you're in London and thinking, but we can never get tickets here because it's always sold out, we know and we feel your pain. On the 26th of November at Barbican Hall in London, I am hosting an evening with Emma Thompson, Greg Wise, and guests, including Bill Bailey, Kat Moran, Game of Thrones actor Emilia Clarke, and Steve Alley. Now, I will be hosting this evening, and it's to celebrate the book Last Christmas. Amazing compilation of essays from all sorts of glamorously famous people, but also some refugees and charity workers to explore what Christmas means to them. And the proceeds from this book go to Crisis and the Refugee Council, as do 50% of the profits from the show. It's going to be a really, really special evening. Do not miss it. And also don't miss the rom-com by Emma Thompson, Greg Wise and others, Last Christmas, coming to cinemas near you, that is affiliated with the book. It's going to be an absolute joy. Now, back to the podcast.
First guest is an American mezzo-soprano who uses her platform to inspire conversations about body positivity, LGBTQ plus rights, social justice issues, and more besides. She is joined by a composer described by The Observer as a Renaissance woman of contemporary British music. Please welcome to the stage Jamie Barton and Erin Wallen! Come and join us, Jamie.
Well, hello. My name is Jamie Barton, and I'm a mezzo-soprano, sing opera, and I'm singing The Last Night of the Proms tonight.
I'm Erin Wallen. I'm the person that stays at home in pajamas writing music.
Yay! So firstly, I'd just like to say Jamie is an ideal name for a bisexual person. Do you know, thank you to Conservative Woman, that joke worked. That surprised me. I didn't think that was a joke, but turns out, yes. Turns out, big laugh.
Well done. Maybe she should start stand-up.
Maybe.
There aren't any out-Tory female stand-up, so maybe she could have that niche.
I'll email her forthwith. She's going to definitely get a listen to this because she knows we're talking about her. So, Jamie, tell us a little bit about what it's like to be you, and I don't want you to have to speak for all women in classical music, but what's it like?
Well, this week it's been quite controversial, I think. Mm. It does seem that coming over, being somebody who's bringing the queer swing to the proms and is fat and happens to be a woman, is very, very much getting under the nerves of some people. But that being said, it's great. Honestly, I get to travel the world. I get to sing opera, which is just basically screaming really, really prettily. And I get to come and speak with one of my podcast heroes. So that's also really lovely.
Jamie, that's so lovely.
Yeah, it's true.
And Erilyn, tell us, what's it like to be you?
Well, this week I've been writing a bassoon concerto. And
me too.
Love it. I love a bassoon. It's the most underrated instrument.
Yeah.
Isn't it? And then I'm writing an oratory about the end of the world.
Oh, it's timely. It's
relevant. Tuned. But all at the same time, so I'm very confused today.
Well, and how is it like to be a composer in the 21st century if you're a woman?
Well, things are sort of better than they were when I started out. I made the mistake of when I was about 10 saying I want to be a ballet dancer. And my parents said, well, you haven't seen any black ballet dancers. So then I moved to composition and kept that very much a secret. And so composing for me is just a really normal thing with no gender attached to it. And so when I was studying, certainly I wasn't particularly encouraged because I didn't fit in the natural, you know, didn't fit into the canon. But things are getting... So well, you shut out of it.
So you think you when you say when you started you weren't encouraged because do you think it was because you didn't look like what people had in their mind when they thought of composer?
Yeah, I remember a teacher came up to me in my primary school and saying, "You know, little girl, classical music isn't for you." And I didn't ask her why she was saying that to me, but now
I've worked
it
out. She specifically came to find you and say, "Just to let you know,
little girl,
Erin, in case." You were thinking about classical music. I just need to be clear, it's not for you. And then just walked away.
And then there was another rather lovely conductor. I was driving him to a gig. I don't know how I was doing that, but I was driving him to conduct a very, very big opera in a big festival called Garsington Festival. And he was saying to me, "Now, I've just got something to tell you, Erin. At the moment, you're a novelty, so I hope you've got all your financial affairs. I hope you've got a pension sorted out because you're a novelty now and it won't last."
You said he was rather lovely.
Well, until that moment.
Yeah. So he said, "You're a novelty act because you're a black woman."
Yeah.
My God.
People say that all the time to me. And they'll say another thing that happens is I was once in Berlin and it's a New Year's Eve party and a German lecturer friend was there and I was introduced as a composer. So she came up to me about 6 or 7 times in that party saying, when you say you write music, what does that mean? I said, does that mean you write the notes for... Does that mean you know about instruments? Does that mean you can... went on and on. So I quite like, what's the word, sort of confounding people's expectations. But that's not why I started composing. I compose because that's what I am.
That's... Did you... Have you written this one or... That's...
Oh, yes.
Laurie backing out. Yeah, very modern. Very modern. Yeah.
What it's note beautiful. Is that, Jamie?
What note is that?
I have... Yeah, absolutely. I can hear it.
Anyone here with perfect pitch?
No. You're a composer, my
I'm a composer, mate. I, you know, they gave me a triangle at school and I was like, yes. I'm going to build from there.
So...
Oh. Still not stopped.
What's wonderful about being a woman in composition? What's freeing about that and liberating about that?
Everything, everything. I get up. Sometimes I don't get up. I sometimes say, I'm going to write music today and I'll just stay in bed. I have absolute freedom.
You mean you write it in bed or you just don't write it? You just stay in bed?
I stay in bed writing music. I can write anywhere. I think the best thing that's ever happened to me is that my music has been to outer space on a shuttle mission. I think that's probably the most fantastic.
On a shuttle mission?
What?
Tell us
to
more.
To the space station.
They took it to the space station? What, like on a boombox?
And a Morrison's band.
Or they just, or they, did they take up a quartet or get a bassoonist and pop him in? And, or her.
Actually, the bassoonist does live in
it. Don't assume bassoonists are all men like you just did. Just because I said he, some of them are women. What?
And I was writing an opera and I was in Houston. I said, surely there's an, the opera's about an astronaut. I said, surely there's an astronaut can help me. And there was, his name is Steve McLean. And we became very good friends. And then it turns out he'd taken all my CDs to space.
Oh, that's absolutely incredible.
That's incredible. Yeah. Wow.
Is there another composer who can say that? No.
J.S. Bach, but he's dead, and so he doesn't know.
He can't say it, he's dead. He can't say it because he's dead. And that is true of so many of the composers we're meant to revere. They can't be a guest on the Guilty Feminist podcast because they're Brahms and not even here. Is there something about being a woman, and when a man is a composer, there's the sort of weight of the canon on their shoulders. Yeah. Is there something freeing about saying, well, actually, we don't know that many female composers because of the history of the world. I can do whatever I want. And then if you add the intersection of being a black woman, is there a sort of liberation in that?
Oh, totally. I feel so little was expected of me, and still is sometimes. I can just do the hell I like. And so in that way, you become quite innovative just by accident.
I do know what you mean, because I think it's the same for women in comedy, that actually there isn't really a model, unless you're going to sort of follow the masculine model. You can almost be, I think sometimes in comedy, more of a person, more of a human, because you're not a man, because it's such a male space. So you can really be you as an individual. Yeah. And that's something, Jamie, you're bringing in as well. You were talking backstage about identifying as fat and what that does and how you can reshape the ideas of the female romantic lead.
Absolutely, absolutely. Me personally, I believe that the audience wants to see themselves reflected on stage. I receive so many notes from people via Twitter, Instagram, whatever, especially after I do shows where I am a romantic lead or, you know, the queen of something or something like that. And I get the response from a lot of people saying, it's just really nice to look up on stage and see somebody of size. It makes me feel like I can be a part of that story too. Mm. I think that's really important. I think that the audience wants to see body diversity, racial diversity, all sorts of diversity on stage.
We want a fat Disney princess.
Yes!
Yes! Come on!
Although, to be honest, Ursula is my favorite Disney princess, so...
Do you know what? Someone said to me the other day, I was talking about The Little Mermaid, and someone made me realise what an absolute arsehole Ariel is. Like,
all the stuff that she gets up to in that, like she like ruins her sister's wedding. She like tells her father no, and all he does is try and support her. She nicks a load of stuff from people and then keeps it all to herself and doesn't let other people have it. And then she like loses her voice for another man because she like wants to be him. It's like, oh, you know, I've got this talent that I've got, you know, is my God-given talent. But no, sod that. I'm gonna give that away for like some legs so I can hang out with this bloke. And then he kind of likes someone else, but I still like she's an absolute dick. Whereas Ursula, all she's doing is sitting back, like mother courage, and just be like, if you want to buy something off me, you can buy it off me. I think she's the hero of that entire operation.
I agree entirely. Okay. I would like to see you next year in Edinburgh.
As Ursula?
Next year in Edinburgh doing Ursula the Musical.
In which you
turn it around, like the Wicked. You know, the way the Wicked made us re-look at the Wizard of Oz. That's what I'm saying. If you did Ursula's POV... misunderstood women.
Well, unfortunately, Melissa McCarthy, they're probably going to give it to her, which has been really upsetting, I'll be honest with you, and this is triggering me somewhat.
Did you not audition for that part?
I'm not famous enough yet.
You will be soon. Did you audition for that part, though?
No, I really wanted to. I did audition for Jenny Anydots in Cats, which went to Rebel Wilson. That's my life. Should I tell you about that? What happened in that audition?
Yeah, go on.
I turned up, I was wearing dungarees, and they basically, I had to sing the song, the Jenny Anydots song in Cats. And then they were like, okay, so the song, great, you sing, brilliant. Now we want you to like act like a cat. So they made me roll around on the floor. But I had dungarees on that, I had a pocket, and all my keys and like money stuff fell out and spilled all over the floor. And like there was an inhaler and stuff. And then... I didn't get it.
There's no business like show business. How does it feel to be coming into something that is so British at a time when Britain's in such turmoil?
It's overwhelming in a big, big way. To be an American, especially leading something like Rule Britannia in something that is so incredibly, like, this is British, this is as British as it gets. There are moments of me going, whew, okay, that feels a little awkward. But that being said, that's one of the reasons that me carrying the pride flag and coming out with that is something that I am really, really into. Because for me, the pride flag is a unifying thing. It's a connective thing. It's a love yourself as you are kind of thing. And that's not a political thing. You know, I can walk out with that flag and be very, very proud of it.
Can I just say, conservative woman says that it is a political thing? They're quite clear about that.
Yeah.
That it is a political thing and that you've made the prompts political. But in a way, there is a power in it. I'm not saying it's party political, but I am saying there is a power in it if we choose to embrace it, in this idea of everybody being the fullness of who they are. Mm. Do you find that the opera world is a world that is embracive or is marginalizing, or does it include?
It is rather inclusive, but it can do more. And I think that probably goes across the lines of any performing arts thing. But in my experience, as particularly as an out queer woman, it's been very, very inclusive. I do want to see more stories told on stage, though, that I, you know, can get behind. I want to see, you know, in opera, we have what we call pants roles, women playing men. And I want to see two women in love on stage.
Like Buffy, Willow and Tara.
We just had Danielle Denise on, and she was telling us that, well, I went to see the production at Glyndebourne, and that was the mezzo-soprano was in a pants role, and Fiona Shaw directed it and played it as a queer story.
More
of those. And in a way, what would be great is if a contemporary woman who was a composer wrote something for you that was a queer love story.
I'm sitting here quiet.
I think I've just had an idea.
You're like Cilla Black for classical music.
Yeah. Okay, here's a pitch. Okay, Erin Wallen. The Little Mermaid is an ancient story. We take Disney out of it. There's no copyright because it's Hans Christian Andersen. It's a million years ago.
Yes.
All right. This character of...
Ursula.
Ursula. Okay. Is she Disney or is she canon? Is she in the original story?
That's a question.
Okay.
I can't remember her from
if
that.
If she's canon, we just take it and we censor it. Tom Selinsky is going to now do some fact checking. If she's not, we have a similar character that's not at all based on Ursula and in called Bursula.
Something that or Phoebe.
Something that is a Disney. Phoebe.
Phoebe, friends, her twin sister was...
Oh, yes!
Ursula.
Oh, hey. That's funny.
Yeah, so you just call her Phoebe.
Okay.
And then,
all right. Yeah. I'm going to suggest that you two play Phoebe and Ursula, the twins. Now, the Little Mermaid, in which
she's the evil
one. If we're doing the Wicked switcheroo, everybody knows Wicked or has a sense of it. If not, it's the other viewpoint of who's wicked and who's good, who's wonderful in The Wizard of Oz. It's a flip on that idea. So the Little Mermaid does not know that these are twin sisters and that they flip in and out of her. So you two play this joint role and we see the sisterhood of the two of you, these real sisters who come together and how they are misunderstood in the wider world. Erilyn, yes. Can I commission you to write that?
And you can write the libretto.
Let's make this happen. Let's make this happen.
I started off with that going, is Deborah going to give away the role of Ursula to someone else whilst I'm sat here?
Listen, you'll both have to audition in dungarees.
I will not smash that.
No, I think this is a great idea. I think more stories and new stories and coming together, we're so married to the past. And where it comes to this style of music, I feel like we go, if it's not old, what is it? It's almost like holding hands with the past, but there are so many ways to hold hands with the past. And one of those ways is to write something new in a tradition that reflects contemporary values. And how much are you able to do that when you're asked to compose music?
Well, I've actually written 18 operas now, and in fact, one
what?
Of them...
18?
That's why I'm tired.
I don't know what I've been saying. I don't know what I've been doing with my time.
And, you know, one of them is a retelling of Manolescu. And actually, it has a line in it, which is, I'm a feminist butt. Isn't that spooky?
Are you joking?
No.
What?
And that's written in 2012 or something, 2013.
We didn't start until 2015. So that's
I'm ahead, you nicked it.
Oh. I didn't. Oh, my God. She's come on this stage to confront me. She's been biding her time. Just going to wait for the last night of the proms. Wow. So we'll have to have that. Is that an aria? Or is it recitative?
Actually, it's a lovely... And actually, it's for five women in the cast, and they play male and female roles.
Wow. Is that... Where it says I'm a feminist band, is that recitative or is that an aria?
Oh, it actually has a bit of spoken text right at the beginning where the two girls are asking, why do heroines always die in operas?
Oh.
And, yeah.
You did say, just for a second, I thought you said herons, and I realised you said heroines. I thought, oh, God, I really don't know as much about opera as I think. Obviously, there's a lot of herons dying in opera. And I went, my brain went, I don't think she would have said that.
No,
think again, that what could she have said? So what was the end of the sentence? Do you remember the end of the I'm a Feminist Bar?
Well, it's two girls doing this homework, and one is sort of resisting, one is saying, why is it that these operas make no sense and women just always... die because they've got no purpose. So the other one says, well, I'm a feminist, but she's standing up for the canon as it is and doesn't want any change.
Oh,
see?
Oh, that's a lovely I'm a feminist, but could we, do you think, at some point perform that part of it and then have a song from that opera?
Yeah.
Can we? Or an aria from that opera?
Yeah, you can.
Or a duet?
Yes.
Could they do a duet?
Yeah, there's lots of duets.
I'd get a proper singer to do it, I'll be honest with you. I'm really good with singing on my own, but when it comes to harmonising, I'm very much a solo performer. I'll give it a good go. I can harmonise Silent Night, but that's about it.
Is it? I'm just going to put this out here to the tune of Silent Night, Erilyn, by any chance.
Yes, I can rewrite bits, it's fine.
Mezzo-soprano, is that higher than soprano, or is that...
Lower.
Lower. Oh, well, maybe we could.
I got you covered.
Yeah, babe. Well, yeah. If you could do all the under bits, I could definitely do that.
I absolutely could.
Fab.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay, all right, sorted. That opera is sorted. I think for the Edinburgh Fringe, the dream... I mean, we get a really big venue, but I think you being the star at the Edinburgh Fringe, introducing this amazing opera star, then what we'll get is both audiences. We'll get the Edinburgh Festival audience, which is very highbrow and fancy, and they would all know who you are. And we'll get the Edinburgh Fringe audience who all know who you are, not saying that you're not fancy and highbrow, Jade.
I'm not. Well, I did wear a black turtleneck in my last show. That's pretty highbrow.
It's hard to know what more you could have done.
if we bring the two of you together and then we have Erilyn compose and I'll do the libretto, yes, that exactly. would sell a full run at a big venue
it
in
really
Edinburgh.
Would.
I say hubristically, but I think it really would, especially if it was a retelling of The Little Mermaid. So I am deadly serious. We've got to think of a great title for it, but I think working title Ursula and Phoebe is very funny.
Yeah, there you go. Done.
Sorted.
Yeah, we so get creative. You didn't think that was going to happen this afternoon.
No.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive and June. Olive and June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive and June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive and June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
No. So can you tell us what we should be going for? This is for both of you. If people are listening out there, and they are, they're listening all over the world to the podcast in all sorts of situations, and some people will have more access to actually going to see something. Some people won't have any access to that because of money or geography. And some people go, oh, this just isn't for me. This is a highbrow world and oh, I don't really understand it. Where should people begin? And if people wanted to come in with a sort of feminist angle and go, look, I'm not going to just learn about classical music or opera for the sake of it. I want to have a feminist take on it from the beginning. I'd like to support some female composers, or I'd like to look at some stories that do have interesting questions in them about feminism. Can you guys give us any ideas of what we should listen to?
Well, I definitely come from an area that there was no classical music. So I understand that angle very much.
Where are you from?
From the mountains above Atlanta, Georgia, a little place called Rome, Georgia.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so I didn't encounter classical music until I was probably 15 or 16. And I certainly didn't encounter opera until I got to college. So I was a little far behind in terms of where a lot of my peers were.
What was it that brought you to classical music?
Mariah Carey.
Was it?
Yeah, Bugs Bunny, the Animaniacs.
Wow.
Like, seriously, it was a lot of different things. I did fall in love with Chopin, the composer, listening to NPR in the United States, just listening to the radio and hearing Chopin. It just, for me, at that very emo kind of high school age, just really, really clicked in. But that's my suggestion. Like, if you hear anything that you like already, if you hear something in a movie that you like on the radio, just go look
Shazam.
It up.
Shazam.
Shazam. You know, if you hear anything classically that you like, go look it up. And then, like, go down that YouTube rabbit hole. Just keep clicking, figuring out what's out there. But if you are into the, you know, looking into female composers, go and check and see what the opera houses and orchestras are doing that are performing works of women, because that's a really good way of just figuring out what's out there and going to listen to them, and then go listen. Just give your ears some love.
That's lovely.
Yeah.
Are there any women who are composers who you particularly like?
I am a huge, huge fan of Libby Larson. There is a song cycle that she wrote that I've been singing on recitals. In fact, I'm bringing it here to London at the end of November.
Oh,
yeah, yeah. The cycle is called Love After 1950s. All of the poems are by women. All of the songs are in different kind of styles. So there's a honky-tonk and a tango and a kind of a jazz piece. But they're all kind of telling stories, just little vignette stories from coming of age as a woman. And what I love about it is that the last song is actually not in the style of any other kind of composition. It's in Libby's voice. Mm. And it is kind of coming, a woman coming to her own and discovering who she is and what she loves about herself. Man, I've never felt as seen as I do in singing that particular song cycle as a woman. I love it so much.
Wow. Where will that be?
Wigmore Hall, November 30th.
Just one night?
Just one night. Me and my amazing collaborator, Kathleen Kelly, will be bringing this feminist, gender-bending recital to Wigmore Hall.
Well, we will all be there. If you're listening at home, the people in the audience might have already bought all the tickets. When does it go on sale?
I think it's already on sale.
It's already on sale. Yeah. Okay, and it's called?
Oh, well, my recital. I don't know. It's just if you look on.
It's called Jamie Barton and yeah. It's Does Libby Larson. Not Does, that's wrong.
Oh, well, the song cycle is called Love After 1950s.
Love After 1950s. Yeah. Oh, well, I'll definitely be there for that. That sounds absolutely amazing. And that's the kind of thing I just want to know about. You just want one lovely recommendation that gives you an in. And from there, you know, the internet will show you another thing that you might like and might suggest something else. Brilliant. And I'm going to ask you the same question, Erilyn. What would you recommend? How did you get into it?
Same thing, you know. I used to go to my little dancing classes, and I remember the pianist was playing Chopin, and then I thought, I love this music. And then I went home and I was trying to find that same music on the radio, so just twiddling the knobs. But I would have to say, we had this fantastic teacher. So I went to school in Tottenham, and she taught all of us from we were 8 or 9 just to read and write music. It wasn't a specialist music school, and she introduced us to the music of Prokofiev, and we would love listening to orchestral music, but she never made a big apology. She never said, oh, this is difficult music. We just did it. And so then I would write music for that class. I would write songs for my sisters to kids. The composition and music was a very natural part of my life. So I would say, just listen, but listen widely. Don't feel that classical music is just this one thing. Within classical music, there's so many different styles. And there are also so many composers that have been, women composers that have been before us.
So how old were you when you started composing?
Probably about 9, but I was always writing. I hated washing up. I have to do, a lot of washing up as a little. So I'd make up songs to
wash up. See, I've done a lot of washing up, and I haven't written anything. Not. I haven't written an oratorio, much less an opera. And I look back now in despair. I had to do some composing at equivalent of A levels, and I found it so difficult because every time I thought I'd written something, it turned out to be a Beatles song. And I was like, how are people putting new combinations of notes together still? I don't understand it, because my brain would always offer me something it had already heard. What dark art, what magical sorcery are you doing?
Hasn't everything already been written
yet? Yeah, this is the thing. I think I'm very relaxed that I don't try to be original. I just try and get a feeling or an atmosphere. And I think that's the thing. If you can just let go of all of that, let go of
trying to be unique.
Yeah. Just get to the feelings.
And just
you
pretend
want.
You've written yesterday.
Exactly.
Yeah. In fact, put it out and go. Just front to style it out. It. When someone goes, that's yesterday, just be like, I've never heard of it.
Do you know, I heard something. One of my other, oh yes, for my oratory about the end of the world, a young friend was playing an orchestra. He was playing Miraculous Mandarin. And I already ordered it from Amazon because I'm going to nick bits of it to put in.
I mean, I suppose that's what all art is, really. It's just a lot of people. And I'd say the true visionaries, the true artists, are the ones that are able to steal stuff and cover it up.
Yeah.
Well, they say Andrew Lloyd Webber's nicked a lot of Puccini. Oh, yes, Andrew Lloyd Webber has nicked a lot of stuff, like the Phantom of the Opera. Isn't that Pink Floyd?
Really?
Is that right? I think it's something like this. There might be needing a fact check here, Tom Selinsky.
Erilyn's nodding.
Is it? What, I think,
but she's nodding in a way like she doesn't want to be sued.
I just need to say something. Julian Lloyd Webber's commissioned a piano concerto for me, so I can't say anything too horrible about his brother.
Julian's a tremendous talent. Yeah. Julian's fantastic.
Yes. Yep. But his brother has stolen a few things, but there are, is that
yeah, but Ed Sheeran has as well. He's been sued all over the shop.
Wow.
But well, you have to learn to cover it. You have to, you know, you can be inspired and put it in different, you know, you take something, you just put it together in different ways. That's all you...
You can co-write this opera that we're doing.
Oh, okay, great. I'll just be there as a sort of continuity person. Go, no, I've heard that before. No, I heard that B flat and something else. You need to change that.
Is very clearly, and I can't be too clear about this, Mamma Mia. You've just written Mamma Mia, and you've got to stop doing that.
Tom says I was correct about that Phantom thing.
Oh, did you find out about, is there an Ursula in the original Little Mermaid?
It's just called the Sea Witch. As far as
the Sea Witch, that's a good name for the opera.
The Sea Witch.
Sea Witch.
There's actually an opera about it.
Yeah.
Ruzalka is the Little Mermaid.
I wouldn't do another two female thing about witches. We'd need to go away from that. See, look at me already. I'm doing it. Yeah. I'm this doing it already. Look at that.
Yeah.
We're just writing off right here. Okay, great. Right.
When you're going to see this for the first night in the West End, you're going to be like, we were there when this was invented. This is incredible. Jade, how did you come to classical music?
The first school I went to was, I'd say, quite rough. And my mum didn't want my sister and I to go to the secondary school that everyone else was going to at there. So she sent us to church for 7 years. And we're not a religious family, but it was a C of E school. It was sort of, easy. And we'd go to Sunday school. It wasn't like too intense with it, beliefs and stuff. So we'd go to Sunday school, and we did it for 7 years. And we got into a C of E school in Bristol, like a comprehensive school, but, you know, it was a good one. And it was there the first couple of years, I was hanging out with some girls I shouldn't have been and smoked cigarettes and lit school toilets on fire, but that's another story. And got into huge trouble. We fell out. And then I was sat on my own in a playground. They'd lit it. I stood next to them. And flushing it, going, oh, isn't this fun? Flushing it. Because I am scared. And I sat on my own in a playground. And these two girls came over to me. And they said, are you okay? And I said, yes. And they said, would you like to come and join us in the music room? And I basically stayed in the music room for the rest of school.
Oh.
And I watched my friend Jo play piano for a year over her shoulder. And that's how I learned to play piano. And then I sat down, I invited my mum and dad to a recital at the school. They thought I was going to be singing in the choir. And then I sat down and I played James Horner's Rose, because Titanic was really big back then. I played that, and my mum and dad, about a week later, I came home and they'd got me a clavinova. They're not musicians at all, but they love, mum really loves, and this is something I was talking to you about last night, Deborah. One of the great things about female classical performers in this country especially are they very much bring a sort of working class audience to classical music. People like Charlotte Church, Vanessa May and Catherine Jenkins are all sorts of people that have made classical music very accessible. And in fact, I don't know that many people who there isn't like an aria or something that they love and they adore. You know, even something as popera, like Time to Say Goodbye, is all at, you know, the funerals of a lot of people and stuff. And so I really, my mum had a love for arias, and she didn't even really know what specifically which ones they were, but she did. And it meant when I was at the school, I was part of the chamber choir, and I sang in the choir, and we did the Hallelujah chorus one Christmas. And I remember being in that group of people and the feeling of everyone singing around me. I don't think I've had the buzz of harmonizing when you're in the middle of it and you can stand next to people that you can harmonize with. But, you know, that feeling, and it stayed with me. And it wasn't until I was 25 that I discovered that I could actually sing at all, because I actually, the girls used to, I didn't have any confidence. I don't know if you think this about singing. Both of you can answer this question. I've got this theory about singing that everyone can sing. It's literally just confidence. And that's what my belief is, because I used to be tone deaf. And then when I turned 25, I was singing along to Time to Say Goodbye, Andrea Bocelli, Sarah Brightman, and who used to date Andrew Lloyd Webber. There we are. It's a little segue. And she said some things about him that I shouldn't say here. And I was singing to that. I was ironing, and my housemate came downstairs and said, that sounds really good. And then I just added it into my comedy routine. I'm not an opera singer, but I do a very good impression of one. And it's basically just sort of, I've fallen into it. And I, like, my favourite music is classical music and soundtracks and the music that can evoke a feeling. I'm not hugely into lyrics, I'll be honest. I'd rather listen to something that I'm able to have my own feelings about it rather than being told what the song's about. I like to sort of come at it myself. You know, and I think a lot of people find classical music in the same way that I have, which is, you know, by mistake, really.
Well, yeah, just start with those inns. Obviously, Chopin's been a big hit.
Chopin was one for me as well,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah. Well, so, he's also one of those composers that composes so emotionally.
Yeah.
You can absolutely go down the river with that particular one. You can feel all of the feelings. It's lovely.
So if you're listening at home, Chopin is spelled C-H-O-P-I-N. Google it and he'll pop up, but also
what's
some of those other ones.
What's I love Bach, of course. What's the one called?
B-A-C-H.
There's one specific thing that he's written that gets everyone. Mm. What's the most famous one?
He's written a ton of polonaises and nocturnes and ballades. It's probably one of the ballades. Yeah. Everything he writes gets me. I'm biased.
And you should check out a fantastic composer called Lily Boulanger. She died when she's only 23, but her music is, you'd love it, Jay. Very full of feelings, for a lot of orchestral music. That is fantastic.
Oh, Lily
Boulanger.
Boulanger. Okay, well, we'll do Lily Boulanger. Mm. Don't go to Chopin.
you should come to my recital because I'm singing some Lily Boulanger.
Oh, are you?
Yeah. We're really excited about that. But right now, Jamie, you need to go. How many outfits have you got tonight?
12 bajillion. Three.
Three. Could you describe, I'm a feminist, but would you mind, in the remaining minute or two you have, describe your outfits?
Well, definitely very flashy dresses, a lot of jewels on them. The last one, though, is the really exciting one, actually. It was designed by a good friend of mine, built by a brilliant costumer who actually built Hamilton. And it's kind of got this big bubble sleeve and then a cape off of the side of it. Just a little bit dramatic. rhinestones on the inside.
What color is it?
It's pewter on the outside and then it's vibrant pink, purple and blue on the inside of the bisexual flag.
I'm a feminist, but I think I'm massively jealous of Jamie.
Well, Jamie, go do your thing. Everybody now, I think, really will watch you on iPlayer if they haven't managed to get tickets because they feel like they know you now. And they do. It's a very intimate space. It feels like it would be rude if you didn't watch Jamie now. She's your friend. And we'll all be there on November the 30th to support you at Wigmore Hall and be moved beyond compare. Big round of applause for the incredible Jamie Martin!
Hello, all you lovely guilty feminists. This is Sindhu V, and I wanted to tell you that I am going back on tour with my show Sandhog. I will be in Aberdeen, and then Bury St. Edmunds, Canterbury, Leeds, Harrogate, North Allerton, Southport, Chipping Norton, and then, looking at my calendar here, yes, Leicester, and then Birmingham, and then maybe Crewe, buy some tickets in Crewe, people, so I can come there. And then I'm going to come to Camberley, Swansea, Bath, Cheltenham, Potters Bar, North Finchley, Taunton, the Lowry in Salford, and that's it. So all of those dates, it ends sort of end of November. Please buy a ticket to come see me if you're in one of those towns or if you're near one of those towns. If you know people who you like or even people you don't like, frankly, tell them to buy a ticket. The show is about, it's about love. It's about the love we have for our parents, for our kids, for our partners, and how difficult it really is to love anyone consistently for a long time because it's demanding love. Anyway, so do buy a ticket. Please come. Love to see you there. Also, if there's a general election, make sure you get out and vote. That's important. What else do I want to tell you? That's about it. You know, just come to my show, make sure you vote, and most of all, be well and be good to one another.
Please welcome to the stage Deborah Frances White. All right. So I want to talk to you a little bit about some female composers, ones that you don't know as well as Erilyn. Francesca Caccini is known as La Caccina. This composer, singer, lutenist, poet, and teacher is thought to be the first Italian woman to have an opera successfully staged. The comedy ballet, La Liberazione di Ruggiero. No,
It's definitely not that, something like that. I can't say how much it isn't that. Was published in 1625. Her songs have endured and can be found in many recorded collections of Italian Baroque. And this is where it goes a bit Hello Magazine, then known as Ciao. She sang at the wedding of Henry IV of France to Maria de' Medici and so impressed him, he requested that she stay. But she returned to Florence, where her carnival entertainment, La Stiava, led to her first position at court. She composed 32 songs and at least 16 stage works to dramas by Michelangelo Buonarroti the Younger. Definitely not pronounced like that. That's the only thing I know it's not that, but it's like that. So like that. And provided... Are you looking at Erilyn's reaction behind me? If you know the proper pronunciation, could you just come in behind me, Erilyn, with the proper pronunciation? Okay. If you don't, doesn't matter, but if you're sure that it's wrong and you know how to get it right, just chip in and I'll just pause for you. And she provided music for court and liturgical settings. At her career's height in the 1620s, she was the highest paid musician in the court. Imagine that. Many of her works are thought to have been written by, any guesses? Her father, because they shared a surname. So people believe they're written by her father. They're not. They're written by her. We know that. And because they shared a surname, many of her pieces were attributed to him, but not many of his pieces were attributed to her, though. That's weird. You'd think it'd be an even Steven switch, but no. I wonder why that is. I wonder if it could be of massive sexism in the history of the world, being a bit of a prick. Fanny Mendelssohn studied composition with Carl Friedrich Zelter, who wrote to Goethe that Fanny could give you something of Sebastian Bach. In inverted commas, this child is really something special. She wrote 460 pieces, making Erilyn now feel like a bit of an amateur. Many of them were published under her famous brother's name. Oh, you'll definitely know her brother, the better known Felix Mendelssohn. The Wedding March, Midsummer Night's Dream, you know the drill. Fanny rarely published her compositions. She allowed Felix to include 6 of her songs in his Opus 8 and Opus 9. The works appeared under his name, and then, when Felix visited Queen Victoria, she sang one of Fanny's songs, thinking it was his, and saying it was her favourite. Felix had to say, well, Your Majesty, yes, that's not mine. Felix admitted that the almost pointedly named Fanny Mendelssohn was a better pianist than he was. Fanny died young and suffered a fatal stroke while conducting one of Felix's oratorios. She died doing what she loved, making her brother look good. He once said, quote, "She is too much all that a woman ought to be for this business." I think Felix is a bit of a knob. And finally, the lesser known Clara Schumann, not heard of her, but I bet you know her husband Bob, Robert Schumann. Robert Schumann said his wife had, and I quote, "composed a series of small pieces which show a musical and tender ingenuity such as has never been attained before. But to have children and a husband who was always living in the realm of imagination does not go together with composing." That was Robert's words. That's nice, Robert. So you get to live in the realm of imagination and your wife gets to live in children's vomit. The BBC Classical Music website informs us that Robert Schumann both inspired and hampered his pianist wife's creative career, as did her ultimate need to support 6 children. And I'm going to say, did he inspire her? And also, how did her ultimate need to support 6 children stop her career? Didn't they need the money? Oh, that's right, BBC website. You mean... So I've just realised this is a BBC event. So that's awkward now. But I think we understand I'm very affectionate towards the BBC and always want to be on it. So we get that. We get that. It's fine. That's fine. This is just the website people who have no power. So well done, you. You're probably working for very little money and you've done a good job. But I'm talking to the website, I'm not talking to the people who wrote it. Oh, that's right, BBC website. You mean... clean children's vomit off herself while he went to work composing beautiful symphonies and sonatas to support them. You don't mean that she had to support her children. You mean she had to operate like an emotional support animal on the plane for her husband. Except not on a plane, because she didn't get to go anywhere. She composed her own virtuoso piano music from when she was a teenager, including her variations on a theme by Bellini. I'm seeing some variations on a theme myself. The theme is throbbing sexism, and the variations are women getting their compositions and careers nicked by their fathers, brothers, and husbands. Pick your relationship to a man. And if you don't have a relationship to a famous man, you won't even find yourself on the Hidden Figures website. You'll take your compositions and your name to the grave. The BBC website says, Clara was a towering musician. Her influence on the repertoire, on the recital format, and on an approach to the piano that favoured searching musicianship over display are as important legacies as her music. And then it says, click here for more on Robert Schumann. Thank you very much. So finally, anything of yours that we should know about? Anything we can come to? Anything we can get online? How can we find out more about you, Erilyn?
Well, I wrote a piece for the Proms this year, which was also for mezzo-soprano and orchestra, and that you can still catch that on it. It's called This Famous Part of the Painting, and it was Prom 39, so that was just about a month ago.
Do you have anything to plug, Jade?
Yes, on the 21st of September, I will be recording my first ever stand-up special for Amazon Prime. Thank you. It's the first year I've actually done anything without singing in it as well. I wanted to make a comment about fourth wave feminism, so I think you guys would really like the show. And that will be coming out on Amazon Prime, I think. I don't know, actually. We
haven't said. Called?
It's called The Ballad of Kylie Jenner's Old Face. Thank you.
And it's not being mean about Kylie Jenner,
it's a sympathy, I feel. Yeah.
It's being critical of the world in which young women feel they have to change things about their body in exchange for money.
Basically, a lot of people say to me that I have an abundance of confidence, and I felt like, as a gift to the world, like I wanted to show people why I have that. And I feel like maybe someone who looks like me might be a better sort of role model. For the girls, Abby, do you feel inspired? Yes. She nodded.
She was going to be a physicist before she came here, probably.
And now she wants to be a comedian / opera singer. Abby, yes. Watch out. If you've got a West Country accent,
Jade.
Yes?
It appears that Jamie Barton has left the building.
Because there's that saying, isn't it?
What?
The show isn't over until the... That's
Pink
offensive.
So, because Jamie Barton cannot close our show with song, and Erilyn Wallen could close it by getting into bed and writing some notes down, but that may be less rousing than it could be, Jade Adams, would you sing something for us? Please welcome to the stage the incredible Jade Adams!
Now, I haven't sang this in ages, and I feel like this, that the amount of confidence it takes to sing this in front of her. I mean, in front of you, Deborah, is one thing, but you, like, this is madness. I'm really glad that other girls left.
I don't know what you mean when my pronunciation of all the Italian opera words was on point.
Wait until you hear me do this, which I think is Italian. It is, but I could have been Spanish. I don't know. I've told you how I know classical music, but I thought it was very fitting for Guilty Feminist Does the BBC Proms to have one of the comedians at the Guilty Feminist attempt some opera. So here we go. I'm so sorry, Erilyn.
No, there'll be loads of people here who are very well educated about music. That's why they've come to this show. Don't worry, it's not just Erilyn. There's probably two-thirds of this audience.
Oh.
It's going to be great, Jade. Come on, Jade! Come on, Jade! Come on, Jade! Come on, Jade!
No,
it doesn't have to be good.
I know. They won't care. Ori miori barbin or car or mi piacim
the proms and the proms in general. And all of you for coming. You've been an absolutely brilliant audience. I've been Deborah Frances White. We've been The Guilty Feminists. Good afternoon. You have been listening to The Guilty Feminists with me, Deborah Frances White, guest co-host Jade Adams, and our very special guests, Jamie Barton and Erin Wallen. The recording engineer was Nasser Pavez. Music was by Mark Hodge. The producer was Tom Selitsky for the sponsored headshot. Thanks to Victoria, Anna, Camilla, and everyone at the BBC Proms. And bye to all, as well as all of you for listening. More information about this and other episodes was at guiltyfeminists.com.
And now, just to introduce you to Erin Wallen's music, here's an extract of her composition, This Frame is Part of the Painting. You can hear the whole thing if you go to the show notes and find the link. Now, just to introduce you to a little bit of the magical Jamie Barton, here is a short extract of her singing at the last night of the proms. The full link is in the show notes.
Get more what the show is about as it goes on. You're looking quite confused, sir. Do you know the show? Oh, you very much know the show. You're not looking confused. It's just your look. It's just your look. We'll look. We'll work on it through the show. We're here to help men, if nothing else. What was that? You're here for gender diversity. You're here to up our man portion. Man portion, coincidentally, a late night cabaret show I'm doing in Soho at midnight tonight. If anyone's interested in coming along after the last night of the proms, it'll be immediately after Rule Britannia. That's the name of my drag out. Rule out nothing, Britannia.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, Prime members, you can listen to this show ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today.